I know what it's like to be black in America. I'm not asking anybody that isn't to identify with that like I do. But what I am asking is just have some understanding for life. Like, we're seeing lives being lost and taken, and we're just acting like it's normal news.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is that voice right there, NFL Network analyst Nate Burleson. You can see Nate every morning on NFL Network's Good Morning Football at 7 a.m. Eastern. He's also on CBS NFL Today and had a terrific 11-year career as an NFL wide receiver. Nate, it's Dale Rich, and I think you know the other guy over here, Jermaine Wiggins, as well. How you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you for the introduction. I have to apologize because I was supposed to do this, I believe it was last week, and then I got called to interview Spike Lee for a new movie that he's dropping. So I'm not making an excuse, because Wigs, no, we don't make excuses.
That's right.
Bring results. But I want to make sure that I apologize first and foremost. How are you guys doing? How are you guys holding up with everything that's going on?
Good. Good.
Okay. And
I'll tell you,
thanks.
a good reason to not do the interview last week was
Spike Lee.
Like, there's probably a handful of people that you could have bumped us for, and I think he's on that list.
The Five Bloods looks like it's going to be good, so we'll make a pass for that one.
Nate, let's start with Thursday, Friday, Saturday of last week. Thursday night at 9 o'clock, the very impressive video dropped from a number of players, star players in the National Football League. Friday evening, Commissioner Roger Goodell put his video out. Saturday, it was followed by Drew Brees talking directly to the President of the United States and saying, this is not about disrespecting the flag or the military or America. It was an amazing three-day period in the history of this league, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great moment for the league, but I just think it was a great moment in history, just in general. And what I mean by that is that we're seeing a shift. We're seeing a shift in people kind of pulling back the blinders on their own lives and seeing things from a different perspective. You know, I've been very vocal about you know, my brothers and sisters who are of a different race, a different culture, a different religion, just seeing what we see and trying to understand what it's like for us when we walk out our front door, or as players when we take off our jersey. And with the players going out on their own saying, listen, we're going to put together a video and we're going to say it, even though it might make people uncomfortable, that Black Lives Matter. I understand that there's a connotation that surrounds that, but some people still try to push a narrative that is negative. We're not. You know, if we have to add also our Black Lives Matter too, which I just don't see why, then we'll say that. But I believe that with Roger Goodell seeing the players in his league and knowing that the player is supposed to come first because his league is built around their talent, then I have to listen. And then he made a video, and then Drew Brees comes out, which I can appreciate. I know we're in a space where people want to nitpick everything that's being said, whether it's from my brother that looks like me or somebody that doesn't. I think we need to be hesitant on attacking people that are trying. You know, it's one thing for somebody to sit on the sidelines, metaphorically speaking, and not get involved and say, I guess another Black life lost. I don't really care. It doesn't impact me. My life is okay. I don't deal with those same things. I don't have those conversations with my kids. It's different to address that person and ask that person for empathy and understanding and try to attack what that person might be saying on social media or in the circles of their friends and family. But for somebody who's trying, like if I have a white friend and he puts out a post or he's trying to give effort into seeing what we're going through, I'm not going to break down his post and dissect his apology. Like, there's so many people jumping on Goodell. And this isn't me putting on a cape for Roger Goodell and saying, give him a break, give Drew Brees a break. I'm just saying, listen to him. Hear them out. And if you weigh what a person is and what he has meant to you and what he has done in the community versus some words that he has taken back and saying, I see things differently, I think you could look at Drew Brees and say, you know what? We understand that you were wrong. It made us angry because we're in a very painful place right now as a culture. But from what you meant to New Orleans post-Katrina and what you do in the community for all races, all religions, all cultures – how you give back, I understand your heart. And that's where we're at right now. We're seeing this shift where I think we're all seeing the same thing for once. And this is talking to African-Americans, too. And I know Wiggs can identify with this. I talked about this on the show. You know, when players have a certain lifestyle. We make a ton of money. We have the ability to disconnect ourselves from the pain or the economic stress that we might have grew up in. And we buy the fancy car, the big house, and we leave sometimes the inner city from where we came. Now, a lot of players do give back. I'm not generalizing us as athletes. But some players, they also have this, like, athlete privilege. And I went on the show and I said, listen, man, you can't sit here and call out people for having white privilege and saying, you need to get involved. My white brothers and sisters, you need to get involved because your white privilege has you blinded to the black struggle and the black plight. If you're an athlete and you're not doing anything, I'll call you out in a second. I'll call you just as coward as people that are causing some of these injustices, because black athletes, athletes of color, we have a certain power within us that we're looked at as heroes when truly we're not. It's the men and women that serve this country. It's the police officers that walk around with integrity and compassion. Those are the real superheroes. But athletes, we get this perception. So if we do, then run with that. Then use your platform. Step up and use your voice. If I scroll through your social media and you're showing me your latest car or your latest workout video or when you and your family went on vacation overseas, and you're not using one post, one Instagram story, one tweet, one Facebook message to just shed a light on equality or some of the injustices that's going on, then you're just as guilty as everybody else. So I love the fact that we're all shifting, and it's together. We're all opening our eyes even more, black people, white people, and every race and religion in between.
Now, one of the debates we've had recently, Nate, is should Bill Belichick release some sort of statement or release some sort of video? And as we've seen, so many players, coaches, you know, GMs from all sports have said something. And, you know, based on reports, we know that the team has had meetings and the team has discussed what's going on. But the most famous coach currently in the NFL hasn't said anything publicly yet. Where do you come down on that?
I would love for every organization, every coach, every public figure in the sports world that we constantly praise to say something. And listen, it's a very delicate position that people are in. They don't know what to say. Some people don't want to be inauthentic if they do say something. But as much as we pat Bill Belichick on the back and praise him for being the best coach of all time, one of the guys that we truly revere. And then you think about the athletes that have ran through those hallways and ran out of that locker room and laid down their bodies to bring winning seasons and championships to hang up in New England. I would hope that you could sit back and say, all right, this is for my brothers and sisters who I know and I coach and I have a relationship with. On our show this morning, we saw Bill Belichick talking to McCourty about an honor that he received. I don't want to mess up the name of it, but Tom Brady put a post out there and then Bill Belichick did. And if those guys have the time to do that, then I would expect them also to speak on something that is so much bigger than sports. You know, I know somebody that works for Uninterrupted. They work closely with the circle of people that LeBron moves with, of course, that being his platform. And she was sharing with me how she wanted to send out something to the Uninterrupted family to really just encourage, motivate, and challenge, and even LeBron. And we were talking, and I said, man, that's deep. That's heavy. For someone in your position where you're simply just somebody underneath the umbrella of Uninterrupted, but you're saying that you're going to challenge LeBron. And what she was saying was, you know, he has the ability right now to transcend sports. Forget about him being in an argument of the greatest of all time. Is it Mike, LeBron, Kobe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? It's not about that. At this point, LeBron has a chance to really separate himself from every athlete that was ever in his position to say something that will last longer than his athletic career. Even though he's made a ton of money, a $1 billion athlete, and it looks like the numbers, the assists, the rebounds, all that is going to take forever for it to be broken, which it will. The things that are going to last forever, maybe it might be what you say in 2020. It might be the tweets that you release in 2020. It might be the statements that you put out there in 2020. Because I do believe we're going to look back at this year, no matter how crazy it's been,
with Kobe Bryant dying, Corona happening, the damn murder hornets, the chaos that happened within 2020, there's a moment right now where I think people are going to look back and say, but man, right around summertime, as a human race, we locked in, and everybody was on board. You remember what Tom Brady said? You remember what Drew Brees said? You remember what OBJ, Jarvis Landry, Saquon said in that video? You remember what Mike Thomas said? You remember when Bill Belichick, the one who rarely talks, but when he does, we listen. You remember what he said? Man, that was a powerful moment. I do believe we're going to look back at this time. And if we all do our part, it could be little by little. Listen, if you don't have the ability, if you're elderly or too young, you can't go out there and protest and march. I understand that. If you're not active on social media, and that's just not your, I understand that. But if you have the ability to, like, we would love to hear your voice. The black culture, we would love to hear your voice. And it simply is just the tip of the hat. Because let me speak personally. And I know Wiggs can identify with this because I know him as a man. And I saw how he moved in the locker room and amongst our friends and our circle on our team that was very diverse. If my white brothers and sisters was going through something as heavy as this, and they asked for their friends in the black community, hey, we need your help. There's some injustices going on. I guarantee we'll rock with you. Even the pain that we might feel as a culture, even some of the systemic issues that we might have that are almost ingrained in us at this point, some of us even taught to us as youngsters, we can find a moment right now where we look back and I'm like, yo, I know more white people that are good than bad. I know more good cops that do their job, that are real-life superheroes, than the bad ones. Now, do I feel pain when a white person or a white cop takes the life of a black person when it's completely avoidable? Yeah. But if my white brothers and sisters needed me, I'm a rock with them. And I feel like that's where we're at right now. We're at a place where everybody's like, yo, black folks need us. Let's step up and do our part. And sometimes doing your part isn't a lot. And I think Bill Belichick saying something, it isn't a lot, but it would mean a lot to us.
Well, I think, Nate, that's the biggest thing is that I think what we want to do is we want people to just understand the pain that we deal with of knowing that people are looking at us differently because of the color of our skin. And another big thing that I think that we'll see this year is, you know, we talked about this whole kneeling during the national anthem and what it kind of represents, you know, where we as black people feel like America has kind of turned their back on us a little bit. Do you think you're going to see more players doing that this year? And what do you think the perception is going to be, you know, just from, you know, everybody when they're seeing, you know, a lot more players kneeling this season?
I do believe that America is going to receive it differently. When Cap did it, so much outrage. And Cap, he was just saying, like, there's some injustices going on. And immediately people shifted the narrative. Bob, what, you hate America. You hate the soldiers that fight for this country. And I remember Cap in 2017, I remember the video vividly, him standing at the locker room saying, nah, this is also for the soldiers that fight for us across seas and come back to a place where they don't feel welcome and they don't have the help they need mentally. And they don't have the stability they need financially. This is for them too. There's some injustice going on all the way around. And I do believe now with all of the conversations, the uncomfortable conversations that we're having, and even me being on TV, I shared a story basically agreeing with Drew Brees when he made that statement. And I said, Drew, I feel you. That sentiment about your grandfathers fighting for this country and serving this country, and you shed a tear when you're listening to the national anthem, I feel you 100%. Because I wanted people right in that moment to listen and say, okay, Nate is on the same page as Drew. Now let me keep listening. And then I said, so when I think about my great uncle Jimmy and my grandfathers who also served this country, I shed that same tear. But in the other eye, I drop a tear for that same grandfather who served in the Navy, Johnny Burleson, who came back and was approached by a police officer and didn't live to see another day. 10 years before I was born in 1971, my grandfather died due to police brutality. So Drew and whoever else may have that narrative, it's not about disrespect. It's just that when I'm up there getting ready for a game and you see me breathing heavily and I'm crying and I'm conflicted with pain because I'm thinking about everything that people in my family have fought for when it comes to this country, that I've served this country, but then also my grandfather who I never met, I see things differently. And that's okay. Like, it, you know, when my white friends give me a call and they're like, yo, Nate, I never knew that story about you. That's crazy. You're a storyteller by nature. You tell 1,000 stories. And I'm like, yeah, so does it make sense that you never heard a story about my grandfather now? And they're like, yeah, I get that now. So the reason I want to do that, not so you can say, oh, I feel sorry for Nate. Let me give him a hug every time I see him. What was me? That was me speaking up for everybody in the African-American community, that whether it's something that has happened to them or through 6 degrees of separation, when we hear about a police officer walking into the apartment of Botham Jean and accidentally shooting them because she thought it was her apartment, or a Tatiana Jefferson and Breonna Taylor, where they shoot into a house blindly and kill a woman that's in her own home that's innocent, or George Floyd, Eric Garner, Ahmaud Arbery. If when we see that, there's different trauma for us. Now, let me be very clear, because I don't want people to mix my words up and start saying, Nate, well, you know, you said this and we feel a certain way about this. Now, I know because of people who have served what PTSD is. I get it. Post-traumatic stress disorder, right? And we also talk about mothers who have children and what happens with them from an emotional standpoint, the things that they deal with. I truly believe there's something that should be described as BTSD, Black Traumatic Stress Disorder. Just think about this for a second. As a Black man who has lost a family member to police brutality, also know cops that are my brothers, like family to me. So I believe that more cops are good than bad. But when I'm watching the news and I come home and my wife's like, hey, check this out. Now let me add this in. My wife also, her father was beaten by the police in Oklahoma when she was 5 years old. So when I see that, it's a different trauma for me. So I don't expect my white friend or my Asian friend to see that and feel the same thing I feel. So when I'm walking around, it's like a cologne I wear on me. And if I'm getting pulled over, I have to literally calm myself down. You know, if there's an officer approaching me, I have to try to disarm him as much as I can by being friendly and just hope, man, I hope I was on his fantasy team at some point. I hope he recognizes me from TV, because I don't want him to see this guy and looks like he works out and feel threatened. And when I'm having a conversation with my kids, I have to have this delicate talk with them about how when they're driving in a car that listen, if you need to reach for your phone, just don't do it. If it's sliding in between the seat, don't do it while the cop is there. And please ask them before you reach the glove compartment and keep your heads attended to and put your wallet on the dashboard. I need you to really focus, because my concern isn't the ticket. My concern is your life. So when we see things, it's way different than how everybody else sees things. And we have to walk around with it. Now, what I do, because how I was raised, even my father, who lost his dad at 17, he doesn't teach me hate. I didn't grow up in a household where he was like, all white people are evil. I didn't grow up in a household where he was like, you should hate every cop. I didn't. I grew up in a household where he explained the realities of life. So I understand a situation can go from bad to worse to death for Black people way easier than it can for white people. So that's what I'm teaching my kids. And as I'm teaching my kids, I think collectively as a nation, as a globe, as a human race, we're teaching other people that don't live our lives. And when somebody just says, like, I understand, I get it, that's a start. And then when you see white people, Asian people, Indian, Arab, all walking and protesting with deliberate passion about just equality and these injustices going on, like, that's powerful. I love that. I'm a fan of the human race. Like, you know, I love being Black. I love being African-American. But when we peel back this skin, we all the same anyway. So, like, I just hope that this is a moment in 2020 that we see things clearly. And it's ironic, because it is 2020 vision, I hope.
We're talking to Nate Burleson, co-host of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. Nate, as I said at the top, you were in NFL locker rooms for 11 years. You know the culture that exists there. You know that there is not a single locker room on the planet in which everybody who's in that room agrees on everything. Will there be more understanding amongst a diverse group of athletes in a single room, where even guys who felt the way Drew Brees expressed himself on that Yahoo interview initially are willing to listen now and maybe open up their minds a little bit?
I do. And Wiz knows this. When you're in a locker room, there's so many people from different backgrounds. And let's be very clear. There's people with very extreme thought on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to race relations, religions. And I came in 03, so you sit in the locker room, there might be a group of white linemen and a group of wide receivers cracking jokes on each other. You know, the wide receivers, what you going to do? Go get your pickup truck. And what you going to drive around with your Confederate flag in the back? They laugh. And the white dudes, what you about to go do? Buy some spinner wheels and go, you know, buy some Jordans and waste your money on jewelry. Like, we would have these sessions where you're roasting on each other. And you have those conversations now, it's a little bit offensive, right? But the locker room is such a unique place because, like, we were family first. So even if something really offended you, you might laugh in the moment, but then you approach that person and be like, hey, yo, that went too far. Now, because we're in such a politically correct society, I feel like some of those jokes and some of those things aren't going to happen. We are a little bit more sensitive. And being that this is the sport of football, sensitivity usually isn't a word that we throw around. But I do feel like we need to be that more. And with Drew Brees and the situation he's been through, I almost predict that when he gets in that locker room, there's going to be that embrace, you know, that bro hug. You slap fives and then you grab somebody real close and pat them on the back with your fist. And they're going to whisper to each other, I love you, bro. I got your back. Because all that we want is, if you don't have any emotional attachment to somebody losing their life, that the first step is getting you to have a deeper appreciation for life. Once we get past that, then we start having another conversation. Okay, so how do you feel about the flag? This is how I feel about the flag. How do you feel about living in America? This is how I live in America. Okay, let's talk about how we raise our families. And once you start having all these conversations, the uncomfortable ones that we will always sneak out of, where a black person be like, I don't even know why I'm talking because he's not even listening. It doesn't make sense to him. And a white person might be like, look, okay, all right, I'm out of here. This is a little too deep for me. I feel like now they're having those conversations. And in the locker room, it's going to be a little bit different this upcoming season. And I do feel like on Tuesdays, when guys are rushing to go home and it's a day off, there's going to be more pressure on individuals to give back to different causes. Of course, listen, communities that need it, whether it's minority or lower class, yeah, of course we want athletes to be there. But it could be any cause, helping women that have been abused, children that need education, the homeless, families that struggle financially and need to be fed. I feel like now there's such a call to action, and there's a responsibility. Guys are getting paid more now than never. I know you can't write in somebody's contract that you need to give back, but I will say this, man. If you are part of the 1% and you're making a lot of money, multi-millions of dollars, and you're not giving back, then you don't deserve that money. That's just my opinion. And I think now, moving forward, to answer your question, yeah, after those uncomfortable conversations are had in the locker room, the next step is pointing at your brother, being like, hey, so what are you doing? I'm going to go to the hospital, man, go talk to these kids because I know they need to smile. Oh, I'm going to go down to the community center, man. There's a group of kids that are in the Big Brother program, and they lost their dad to police violence or black-on-black violence. Or they grew up in the adoption circle. So I'm going to just go show my face. Like, I think that's where we're at right now. And if guys aren't doing that, the vets on the team, the leaders on the team will call them out.
And Nate, I've seen a lot of people now calling for somebody in the league to sign Colin Kaepernick, and that needs to happen. Now, I certainly thought he should have been in the league in 17 and even in 18, but now just from the football aspect of it, how difficult would it be for a quarterback to take 3 years off and then come back?
It's tough, man. When you're out the league 1 year, it's tough to get in. 2 years? Feel like it's even more difficult. 3 years, I think it's impossible.
Yeah.
But what I keep going back to is just the X's and O's of it. You know, people try to push this narrative that Cap was garbage in his last year. He wasn't. If you look at the numbers, you look at how much he was rushing for, still dynamic talent. And that was when he had a banged up arm. Now he's been out of the game 3 years, completely healthy. And you look at the backup quarter, I will take Kaepernick over every backup quarterback in the league. I would take Kaepernick over a handful of starters in this league, for sure, no question. Some starters I would take them over, but they're a good fit for the team, so I'm going to just let that be. But when people start thinking about Cap, they're like, well, was he really that good? He went to a Super Bowl in an NFC Championship game at a very young age. I'm pretty sure at this age he can come back, especially with how they're running these RPOs and these wildcat formations. And you look at the offense that Lamar Jackson was running. Like, Cap was doing that. We forget that Cap was rocking that RPO, putting defenses in a bind. So if he can come back at his height, his weight, his speed, and that rested arm, yeah, of course he can still play. My question is ultimately, does he really want to? I know occasionally I see a statement, and I don't know if it's from him or his camp. Occasionally I kind of hear something, but as a fan of his, as a guy that went to the same college as him, I would love for him to just come out and be like, yeah, I want to play. For sure, hands down, here I am. This is me in front of the camera talking to you, just like Dale spoke to the camera, the player spoke to the camera, just like Drew did. I want him to just talk to us because, one, I want to hear from him. I want to hear his voice on what's going on, and then I also want to hear from him as a football player, if he still is that. If not, then maybe it's his calling is deeper than that. Maybe he's looking at the sport of football thinking to himself, man, I don't even want to put myself through the hassle of being criticized. You know, as soon as I make a mistake, people wanting to jump down my throat. So I would love to hear from him. You know, as much as we can speak for him, who cares if he's better than every backup quarterback unless Cap comes out and says it.
Now, you know, Cap's a good person because around here everybody's like, at the Patriots should sign him. You know, now that Tom Brady is no longer with the Patriots, I think that, ooh, yeah, and this is where I feel like when you look at this football team, you know, because, you know, you've been around this game long enough to know, and we struggle here, and I think it's going to be very difficult for them with a young quarterback who's never played in Jared Stidham for them to be successful. What do you see from this 2020 New England Patriots football team, and what kind of team can they be, in your opinion?
Well, one thing I've always appreciated about the Patriots offense is that they approach each week with the most variety. And by that, I mean they mix it up better than most. It's a combination of do what they do best, but also game planning for the next opponent. Now, I know there's been individuals that have come out and said, well, you know, Stidham, the kid, he's just going to have to take care of the ball. If he takes care of the ball, they'll be perfectly fine. That's not always the case. Because you can be a micromanager, but that's one thing. To be a micromanager under the – or you can be a game manager, excuse me, that's one thing. But to be a game manager under the microscope of Bill Belichick is a completely different type of pressure. So as much as I can have faith in the coaching staff, right, and how there's this – chicken or the egg conversation. Is it the coaching or was it Brady all of these years? Was it a combination of both of them? I think now we're really going to find out, what is Tom going to do in Tampa without his coaching staff? And what is Bill Belichick going to do in Josh McDaniels? What are they going to do within that offense? I would love to see them sign somebody that brings in a different type of energy. I know Cam Newton's name was thrown around and then people were saying, well, Cam doesn't necessarily fit, and I'm not sure he'll flow with how things go the Patriot way. And then we don't know if Cam's completely healthy or Kaepernick. Think about bringing in one of those guys. Doesn't that add the right amount of pressure to Stidham? And it allows you to see everything you need to out of that quarterback. Like, you almost put the player in a position to make the decision for you. The same thing is happening down in Dallas. I mean, if they do get the deal done at some point and Dak signs a contract, don't you believe that Andy Dalton's putting a different type of pressure on Dak Prescott? So we're really going to see what Dak Prescott has made out from week one. Not like some late games in a year where he's inflating some numbers and throwing a rock around. I'm talking about from the jump. The same thing is happening in Chicago. Don't you think this year is really going to show us what Mitchell Trubisky is really made of? I mean, he got Nick Foles in behind him. A dude with a strong resume. Got a statue in Philly, Super Bowl ring. We get it. We know everything about Nick Foles. But now the pressure is really on. I was told a long time ago, as a young player, you never know how much a horse can pull until you hook a trailer up to him. So we got to hook a trailer up to Stidham. We got to put him in the kitchen, see if he can handle the heat. And the only way you do that is you bring somebody in that has a stronger resume, that might be a little bit more athletic, that's willing to go out there and say, I'm your starting QB. So I would love to see them bring somebody in. I just don't see it happen.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. I'm on the Wiggy Cam and I have both been calling for Newton this whole time, and it just doesn't seem like it's happening.
I'm waiting for them to hitch the wagon to Cam Newton.
Nate, got to ask you, on your show, you went over your top five teammates of all time. They include some of our favorites, and Randy Moss and Deion Branch. I noticed Wiggy just missed the cut. I assume he was an honorable mention?
Yeah, he's honorable mention, man. Let me tell you this thing about Wiggs, though, man. First of all, Wiggs, whenever he got real excited, his voice went up. He got a really high-pitched voice. Wiggy Wiggs. And he was chopping dudes up on the field. Game day, he would get busy. But what I loved about playing with Wiggs, it'd be practice, because we both came out with swag and the energy, and we wanted to have a little bounce to us. But we loved talking that talk. And I can appreciate that, because growing up in Seattle and idolizing Gary Payton, one of the best trash talkers of all time, I remember watching Wiggs. And here's another thing. Wiggs will remind you how many catches he had. He kept track of that.
Yep.
If it was a game ending, he'd be like, yep, I'm still leading the team. Yep, make sure everybody knows that, right? Jermaine Wiggins leads the team in catches. Respect me.
That's right.
Like, all right, Wiggs, we got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, that, you know, Nate, that's, I always say this, right? I can't wait for somebody to pat me on the back. I got to do it myself. And, you know, think about this, though, and the thing that I appreciate about Nate, right, Nate always had this great personality. And I try to tell these guys that when we were in Minnesota, we had this thing where we would go around the locker room with a camera and a video camera and a microphone, and we'd go to different people. And I was like, I felt like we created the video podcasting, because we was doing
There's no evidence of this, though, Nate.
It's
Wiggy keeps telling us about it. We have no idea what he's talking about. We have no footage of it.
It's out there. We created the inside the locker room. Everybody does it now. All players,
right.
They got microphones in their hands. They're going to each other, cracking jokes. We been did that. And we had the personalities. You got to think about it. It's Boston, Culpepper, Brian McKinney, like Pat Williams. We really started it all. We just don't get the credit for it, man.
Right. Yeah, that's what I try to tell them, man. I try to tell them that we, we had some good times. And, you know, we had those ciphers going where people had, you know, because Nate's the rapper of the group, right? Nate will lay down the rap, so we had the ciphers going and all that good stuff. Now everybody's doing it. But I try to tell them we created this back in the day, man.
Yeah. Wiggs is a legend, man. I've always appreciated him. And on top of that, stand-up dude.
I appreciate
not a lot
that.
Of them, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Same to you, bro.